So many good ways to bet the Preakness next Saturday. One of them is the Preakness Betting Challenge coming to you from our friends at First and Express Bet. What is it? Well, it is a $1,500 handicapping tournament, live bankroll, $1,000 in bankroll, and $500 goes to the prize pool. What's in that prize pool? BCBC seats, MHC seats, Pegasus seats, California Crown seats, new contest happening this fall, and of course, cash as well. Keep that in mind. You can also feed your way in and potentially qualify to this big tournament. Go to expressbet.com/tournaments and get all the details. That URL once again, expressbet.com/tournaments. Welcome to the In the Money Players Podcast, one of three shows we've got out late week ahead of a loaded weekend of racing. Elsewhere, you're going to be able to find our analysis of Hawthorn and Monmouth on different shows. On this show, we're going to kick things off talking about Naira Racing. Then we're going to bring in a special guest from First to tell us about some very cool opportunities coming up wagering-wise and contest-wise for the Preakness Stakes. And we're going to close things out by reconvening our JRA team to talk about Forever Young's big run in the Derby, discuss sort of the politics around the decision not to claim foul, etc. Ask the big question, was he actually best in the race? Could he have won? We're going to get to that and talk about the Victoria Mile. Big JRA action this Saturday night into Sunday morning coming up. So let's get to it right now. PTF back with you. Happy to be joined by a man you heard all over our Kentucky Derby coverage. He's back now to talk about this Saturday card at Naira. Some stakes racing happening out there at Belmont at the Big A. Really the Big A, but you know what I mean. He is Jonathan Kinchin. JK, what's up? How's the re-entry into the world going?
You know, it's always tough after Derby. It takes a little while. It's like you just become so immersed in those 2 minutes. And it's well like, put. And it's the other thing about it too, is like, there's such a buildup for like months and months and months, and you get, and we do a pretty good job. I mean, this year we were pretty heavy, but you know, we do a pretty good job of kind of trying to temper that, but we were all in Derby, 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 Derby. And then 2 minutes it's over. There's like this natural, especially if you don't hit the race, it's natural, just like let down of just like, oh, it's like, oh, okay, well now what? And, it starts to come back into form, getting to go down to Monmouth on Saturday and then being on America's Day at the Races with these big Derby, Belmont preps, you know, with the Peter Pan and stuff for Naira will be fun as well. So things will probably start to normal out over the next couple of days.
What's your story with Monmouth versus Aqueduct and where you'll physically be? I know you said, you know, obviously you're on the other show we did covering Monmouth races, but will you mostly be at Aqueduct, or are you occasionally going to be headed down Jersey Shore?
Yeah, I'm going to kind of be doing what I've normally done to a certain extent, where I'll be, when I'm in Austin doing it remote. When I'm in New York, I'll be at Aqueduct. And then there's a couple of days that I will be going to Monmouth. This being opening weekend, kind of the coming out party of the partnership with Monmouth and America's Day at the Races and Naira. And so I think they kind of wanted to blow it out of the water. So Lafitte will be there this Saturday. Myself, Rajiv, and Paul LaDuca, who I believe is going to be there basically every day. So it's, you know, I think I got like two or three of them on the schedule right now going down there, but you never know, that could change.
Head down for Pick Your Prize if you can. I'm going down for that one. That's June 1, and that's an amazing contest with there's going to be like 8 BCBC seats. It seems down your street.
Yeah, I like that you mentioned the seats that matter.
Oh my God. You couldn't just let it go.
Who couldn't just let it go? Oh, you see what I did there?
The point is, I think it's the rare. I don't know though. Are you allowed? Oh gosh, with the partnership with Naira and Monmouth, are you allowed to play in it? That's another question.
Yeah. No. Of course.
Okay. Good. Good.
Well, I'm not an employee.
It's going to be a super fun day down there, and hopefully that'll be one of the ones they press you into service for. I'm looking forward to it, but we're not here to talk about Monmouth. We're here to talk about Belmont and Aqueduct, and as you mentioned, these important prep races for Belmont Stakes Day, which is obviously going to be happening at Saratoga this year. And we kick off this show talking about the sixth race, the Peter Pan race, that has a terrific historical connection to the Belmont Stakes. And I guess the first question we have to ask when we look at this year's field is Tuscan Gold going to run here as a more of a prep for the Belmont, or are they going to go for the gusto and head right to the Grade One Preakness? What do you hear? What do you know about Tuscan Gold and where he's going to end up?
You know, I don't know. I think when you Google Tuscan Gold, there's not pretty much there's not any information. I would imagine what Chad is doing is just kind of looking to see how the race unfolds, seeing if any other horses maybe decide to detour to take on a Preakness, or see what's going to happen with the Preakness. What's Mystic Dan going to do? You know, does someone else come up with a situation where they don't show up? I think he's probably holding his cards to wait to see to the last minute. My prediction will be that he'll opt for the Preakness. That's just my prediction. No information there. So we'll see what happens. But he's also got unique insight for this race. So there's also the opportunity to kind of spread them apart a little bit here to see what happens. But I think this race kind of starts with deterministic, right? A horse that I was interested in for the Kentucky Derby. He did not run particularly well in the Wood Memorial, considering what he had done in the previous race of the Gotham. And the kind of conservative approach from Christophe Clément to not let those roses get dangled in front of your face and do what's best for the horse and the horse's career, pass on the Kentucky Derby and show up in the Peter Pan to run in the Belmont and make it look a little bit like Toneless back in 2014, 10 years ago.
That was the last one that did the double. I agree, certainly worthy of discussion. The form looks muddy. It's just very hard to know what to make of it, of him. You know, the big win was in the slop. Just a Touch ran terrific subsequently and then terribly. I don't know what to make of him. I'm tempted to go in a different direction, honestly. The horse that I really like in here is the Wine Steward. Coming out of that Lexington Stakes run, whereas we discussed beforehand, he almost had to be short and still ran just a tremendous race, getting within three quarters of Encino. And, you know, finishing, I think, second by 8 or 9 lengths in that spot. He's just a tough horse I've always liked and just looks very dangerous in the spot, no matter who turns up against him. That's the horse I wanted to focus on wagering wise. You mentioned deterministic as an interesting horse to talk about. Is that who you're selecting?
Yeah, I'm going to pick him. I'm going to use the other two, Unique Insight and Tuscan Gold, if he shows up there. But deterministic ran so well in the Gotham that I just, and he ran so well on debut. I have to go with those two performances rather than what we saw recently from him. And kind of hitting the reset button to a certain extent, I think is a little bit interesting with him. Kind of just giving some time, try to figure out what the issue is and not throwing him into a 20 horse field that maybe wasn't going to suit him. I'm very curious to see how he runs and how he reacts to what that little time off and depending on the price, like if he's 6 to 5, then no, I don't really have any interest in getting involved there from a win standpoint. But from a pick six multi-race standpoint, based on some of the other opinions I have, definitely have to have deterministic.
I've got it 3 as an A with the 7 deterministic as a B. JK has got the 7 deterministic as the A with the 2 and 5 as backups. I think the Wine Steward is conspicuously absent from your picks. This seems like a horse you'd love based on all the times we've talked horses together. What don't you like about the Wine Steward here?
It's a little bit less of a don't like and a little bit more of a, I think off of that performance is likely to be a little bit overbet than what I think he deserves. Definitely one that you know, you can't use them all. And definitely one I could sub in if Tuscan Gold decides to go a different direction.
To just amend what you just said, you can use them all, but you really shouldn't use all but one.
Well, that's or all but two, according to the Turf American Turf Derby weekend.
All but two is maybe almost as bad as all but one. Let's move on to more graded stakes action. We've got the Grade Two Man O' War Stakes coming up next. Race number 7 at the Big A, going 1 3/8 on the turf. A race I thought was very notable for 1 3/8 turf race, JK, in that it seemed like there was just a ton of speed, especially for what we're looking at here. I think that could be a determining factor in the race. I think most people's eyes, understandably, will go right to Nation's Pride, and he makes all the sense in the world and will be an A on every ticket for me. But I was going to make you a case for the number 6 Greek Order in this spot. I think the two-turn mile around Keeneland was probably just too sharp for this horse. And I think second time off the layoff might really like things here. Interestingly, looking at Timeform US, the pace in that race was listed as fast, but it did hold together. So I'm thinking he also might have been sort of subtly against the flow, getting back out to these longer distances. This isn't the best turf form from overseas you're going to see for coming to the U.S. It's not like, oh my God, this horse is definitely going to dominate. But those are tough handicaps this horse was running in there. I mean, you could see the Newmarket running, you know, in a field of 34 and finishing second. This horse is good enough to get the job done, I think, if things work out for him pace-wise. And I think he's going to be a really nice price with the Applebee's in there to make the market for him. So that's how I'm going to play this one. The six as the A and the nine as the secondary A. Who do you like in this race?
Well, so here's, I'm going to say why I didn't use Greek Order, and then I'm going to tell you why the horses I do like. I think when you look at Greek Order, you know, I know that Timeform US has the figures that they'll put for races that are in Europe, and
yeah, they're no good. They're always low and inaccurate.
Right, not a great comparison. But what you can do is you can compare the European numbers to the European numbers. And Greek Order in the European Timeform US fastest number was a 1:12. Silver Knot and Nation's Pride together have run 8 races faster than that throughout their career. I just think that they're better than him. Yeah, if he does appreciate the added ground, that I still worry that he's not as good. The three horses I do like, and it's annoying because they're going to be the top of the market, but there's three horses I like a lot of stuff about them. Ohana Honor, I thought, ran extremely well last time and ran a very similar race to what Silver Knot did, right? Slow-paced, mile and a half at Keeneland, nice finish. Similar final fraction. There was different, you know, final times, but that's because, you know, with moisture in the track, it can change. They both ran 1:23s on Timeform US. I just think that they both ran so well that I can't ignore them. Ohana Honor is going to be ignored a little bit. They're going to fall in love with the Charlie Applebee's. I have to have this horse. Silver Knot, I just think is better. A horse that I loved as a two-year-old and has just kind of trained on to be a pretty good horse. And I think that is another one that I just can't get rid of Silver Knot. I have to have Silver Knot based on that last race and what could be a step forward. And then with Nation's Pride coming in fresh, Nation's Pride runs extremely well off of layoffs. Off 111-day layoff, win. Off 104-day layoff, win. After 127-day layoff, win. He comes in off 176 days. I just feel like he runs well fresh. I have to have all three of them. I'll get skinny a little bit later.
Makes sense. Just put them in that order, 189. Any top pick? How do you want me to acknowledge that?
I mean, the top pick, I guess, has to be whoever's the longest shot, which I'm assuming will be Ohana Honor, just because I look at them all very equally to have chances. Okay. Nation's Pride is going to be a pretty big favorite. So give me the longest shot on the board.
All right, we'll see how it all turns out. It's a cool running of the race for sure. Race number 8, we take a little bit of a step down in class to maiden New York bred fillies going 6 furlongs on the dirt. I thought Mulkey was a bit of a standout in this spot. Horse was bet to long odds on debut, didn't quite get the job done, but got in a duel, was down on the inside in the day where the inside didn't seem like it was any advantage to me. And the winner of that race has come back to win again. I feel like drawn outside slightly, not outside, but drawn outside one of the other horses, the three, who I think is likely to be speed, I think could just get a better trip here and show us why she was bet to odds on the first day. I'm very uncreative. Give me Mulkey, who I assume will be a big favorite once again. Anything clever from you here?
Yeah, I'm going to spread in here, right? I mean, look, it was 1-2 last time, ran well, going to be short again here, but there's a lot of horses that like have similar figures, right? I mean, yeah, it's just, you know, Grandilla's not that far off, Inflammable not that far off. You know, Eastern Star has a race that makes a little sense. I'm going to spread here. And like I said, I'm going to get a little bit skinnier later. I'm going to try to pick up some value and try to beat Mulkey, but I'm not going to let Mulkey beat me. I'll use the 2 Inflammable, the 3 Grandilla, the 4 Mulkey, the 5 Spirit of Esther, Eastern Star, who I believe is the, you know, we do it early. I don't have numbers. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And then the 10 Nikki Brain Trust, the first time starter for Ray Handel, who in his career is only 5% with first time starters, but he really has improved upon that. Like once upon a time, he was 0%. And the last year, he's won like six of them. So I think that that's an interesting horse drawn to the outside.
It could be, if Mulkey doesn't show up, it could be a race that sets up for a first-time starter. I just didn't see enough precocity in either of the first or pedigrees. So you mentioned six runners. Do you want to grade them into A's and B's, or is this sort of like just a throw a net kind of a race?
Yeah, I mean, the A is definitely Mulkey, but I want to try to beat Mulkey. So I don't want to give away all of that. You know, I don't mind single A-ing the favorite when I love the favorite, but single A-ing the favorite when you don't trust the favorite is, to me, is backwards from an equity standpoint. So I'm going to try to spread as much as I can. But look, these things all depend on what your budget is, right? I mean, you kind of have to crack some eggs and what your objective is. I'm going to try to use them all as equally as I possibly can.
I'll just make Mulkey the top pick, but make them all A's because you don't want it. You're just using Mulkey as another contender in a spread race. I think that's fine. Let's move on to race number 9. We go to the turf, an allowance race going a mile and a 16th. Lots of main track onlys that hopefully we won't need. Have you double checked the weather here? Because I realized I did not heading into this. I can do that real quick if you haven't looked.
I have not looked, but I'm doing that thing where I talk really slow.
All fine.
And let's see Saturday. Partly sunny, then slight chance of showers. Saturday, 20% chance of showers after 2 p.m. Nah, I mean, it doesn't seem like it's going to be enough hopefully to really affect anything.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because usually, you know, if it was graded stakes, I'd feel very confident. But this is a race, especially with that many MTOs, they do have the option of taking off if they decide.
It is going to rain on Friday, so that's a little bit of a concern. So we'll have to see what happens there.
But I handicapped it for turf. I'm assuming you did as well. Who did you come up with here?
Yeah, I mean, I always handicap it for turf until they force me not to be able to do so. Let's see here. I hit the wrong button, so now I'm looking at the wrong race. Yeah, for turf, I think the Dancing in Denial is interesting. Closing to a slow pace last time at Gulfstream Park, a horse that I would like to try to use if possible. Bellini, is that how we're saying that? Bellini,
I would believe.
Yeah, Bellini. I thought ran well last time at Keeneland as well, closing into a slow pace. You look at Timeform US, has that early fraction blue, was closing there. And then Dancing with the Stars, who ran well last year in that kind of last race before hitting the bench after switching to Rick Dutrow. So maybe with some time off, getting fully into the program, another one who I thought would run well. I just feel like you need all three in this spot. And I'm going to afford myself that right because I'm going to single someone in the next race.
All right, I like that. Tipping the hand. 3, 7, 8 for JK. Those are logical, but I'm going to throw the 6 at you. American Law, a horse that has not raced on turf in an age, but this horse, when switched to turf, improved significantly, then got gelded, then hasn't been back on turf since. So a couple of these recent running lines are really ugly, but figure-wise, this horse isn't that far behind, I don't think, if you factor in a little bit of turf improvement. One who's in for the tag should be a big price. I think could pull an okay trip. I'm going to mention the number 6, American Law, as a potential alternative. And I'm going to probably, I think the way I'm playing it is going to allow me to back up with the 3, the 7, and the 8, all three that you mentioned. Let's get to this race where you have a strong opinion, JK. Race number 10 is an allowance for fillies and mares 3 and up going a mile on the dirt. When you say you're singling, are you single A-ing or are you stone cold? And who's the lucky horse?
Stone cold. You know, I feel like a lot of these races I'm locking up that prior to what we've talked about. I feel like something has to really go wrong to not be alive at this point. And so just from an equity standpoint, I feel like I have to kind of single A here. So I'm going to use the 5, Brodery, back-to-back wins and feels like a horse that's going to appreciate stretching out. You look at the race, the pace figures and the final figure, kind of even, like just kind of clicking along in those races, you know, not too fast early, too fast late, just kind of steady throughout the races. The type of horses I like to stretch out. So I'll use that horse, Soul A, and that is the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, Brodery.
Yeah, Brodery makes plenty of sense in this spot. What about a pace angle on the number 9, Bona Dieu? This horse, certainly seems to need the lead, but I think she'll probably get it. her career mark not bad with the 4 of 12. I don't hate her as a partner for Brodery or anybody else you want to get cute with in this spot. Was your she's been a little bit flattered, right? Not the fastest pace last time, probably attracted favorite speed two back, but I think because of those things also, she might not be that bad, all things considered. Always a little trickier doing these races days before, like you say, without numbers, without morning lines. But I'm going to throw the 9 in to pair with your 5. Obviously, from your strategy point of view, it doesn't make sense for you to double the cost of your ticket, including one like this that you don't love in a race where you have one that you do love. But can you see where I'm going with Bonadieu, or do you think I'm out to lunch?
No, I don't have a problem. I mean, you know, I think that, you know, she's right there, but it's, you know, I don't have a problem, but the nature of the ticket, the idea is I had to find somewhere to single through this situation with all these lockups. And I just had to lay with one horse.
I get it. Let's go to the nightcap. Race number 11 is another maiden claiming race for statebreds and fillies. Once again, when it comes to this pick 6 on this Belmont Stakes preview day at Aqueduct, how are we going to get paid?
Well, if we're going to hope that it stays on the turf. I'm only going to use 2 horses in here, the 3 Rosé Summer, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and the 9 Bossy Jeans, right? These are 2 horses that have honorable performances in maiden special weight and are dropping in for attack. And they're dropping for 2 trainers and owners. Or trainers, I mean, I'm talking about trainers with Maker and Clement, and then owners with 3 Diamonds Farms with the 9 horse. That kind of, you know, they're realistic. They're in the game for a higher level type, and they're going to put them where they should be. And if they get them claimed, they get them claimed. So I'm just going to use those 2 and hope it stays on the grass.
Yeah, those were 2 on my short list. I did not have a super strong opinion in this one. Just for a laugh, I'll throw out 1 more possibly to include in here. Oh, pace wise, I was going to ask you about Bossy Jeans. Potential pace advantage there. I mean, do you think she'll just go to the front?
Well, I mean, her pace wasn't fast last time, right? So she was close up, but it wasn't a fast paced race. It's Louis. You know, you're drawn outside. You want to obviously get your position moving forward. But no, I don't think that, look, she's dropping as well. So maybe there is a level of aggression centering away from there. I just think she'll probably break away from there, try to get her position moving forward, like to sit, you know, in the clear 2nd or 3rd, and then hope that her class prevails.
The other one I wanted to mention is Once an Eagle, the 5 runner, the other Clement in this spot, been off a long way, apparently is going to lose Pratt to the outside, well, one of the outside runners running at the beach, but, you know, the Davis Clement partnership has been such that I'm not convinced that's any kind of big problem. Just another one that seemed a bit outclassed against maiden specials, but, you know, Clement's so good first up, so good off a layoff. I thought this horse would just sit an absolutely perfect trip, maybe in the second flight and have a chance. One other I'll mention. I'll write it down. 5-3-9, 3-9 for JK to close things out on this belt. It's kind of confusing. It's the Belmont at Saratoga preview day at Belmont at Aqueduct. It's a lot of Belmonts, you got to say, when you say this.
That's Naira for you right there, huh? Belmont at Aqueduct for Belmont Stakes at Saratoga. Get them all. Get everybody.
It's a mouthful. Don't say that on TV is my advice to you. And especially if you throw in the 3rd Belmont where it's Belmont preview day, it just gets too confusing. But it's a cool card, and we're going to be betting. Reminder also, there is a bet. Races aren't out yet, but there's a bet linking. There'll be a pick 5 linking the best stuff at Monmouth with the best stuff at Saratoga. JK, appreciate you coming on here today, and we'll be talking very soon.
See you guys.
America's Day at the Races returns this Saturday on Fox Sports to cover Belmont at the Big A Spring and Summer Meet. Tune in on Saturday to watch 11 exhilarating races headlined by the Man of War Stakes. Join Maggie Wolfendale, Jonathan Kinchin, Acacia Courtney, and the rest of the Fox team, Acacia Courtney Clement, I should say, for live racing, expert analysis, expert picks, and more. Bet on the races using Naira Bets, where new members can get a $200 deposit match, nonstop fun at Belmont at the Big A. For showtimes and the TV schedule, go to inthemoneypodcast.com/TV. Next up on the show, we bring in a returning guest, a man who's going to be part of our Preakness live stream on Tuesday at noon, along with Matt Bernier, JK, and myself. He's here today to talk about the Preakness wagering options, including a chance to win $5 million through the first Grand Three. Pick him from First Racing. He is Peter Rotondo. How are you, buddy?
I'm great, Pete. How are we feeling today?
Feeling pretty good. Got this little scratch thing going on in my throat. I think it means I've been working too hard. What do you think?
Well, you do talk a lot. I mean, so I would imagine that's part of the problem right there with the throat.
Occupational hazard, but it's such an exciting time of year as we now get to fully turn our attention to the Preakness. I want my audience to pay attention to this first Grand Three Pick'em wager because, yes, obviously the $5 million is not going to be easy to win, but there's other prizes as well, and heck, it's a free roll. People should be paying attention to this. You can find all the details at inthemoneypodcast.com/grand, but I wanted you to give us a little bit of an overview of what this $25 million plus racing series is all about.
Yeah, sure. So the first Grand Three, as it's being labeled, is linking the three big events that First owns, right? The Preakness, the California Crown, which is the new event late September, September 28th at Santa Anita, and the Pegasus. So essentially, we linked all three together, put a brand over it, obviously out there in the marketplace, sponsorship, trying to make get a big sponsor over the three events. All three will be on NBC Sports on some fashion. And it kicks off with the Preakness. There's a $5 million bonus attached if you win the Preakness. So this is for the owners. If you win the Preakness, the California Crown, the Dirt Race, which used to be the Awesome Again, and the Pegasus World Cup Dirt, you win $5 million to the owner. There's a $2.5 million horseman bonus connecting the dinner party stakes, of course, the grass race on Preakness Day, into the California Crown John Henry Turf, into the Pegasus World Cup Turf. Again, for the owners, $2.5 million. So that's $7.5 million. If you look at the purse money on the 3 days, it's over $12 million combined. And then finally, which is what we're here to talk about, we came up with a fun contest, fun game, free to play. Again, free to play. The first Grand Three Pick'em Challenge, and it starts on Preakness Day. So on Wednesday of next week, it will open the site so you can log on. There's many ways to get to it. I think the easiest way to say is go to Preakness/contest, Preakness.com/contest. Don't go until next Wednesday. Well, of course, everyone will know. But basically, it's pretty simple. You will be able to pick the top four in the superfecta. So you click a couple of buttons. Your top four in order is the idea. If you could cold deck the super, you'd be stay alive for $5 million. You have to do the, and again, when you have to do it again at the California Crown, and you have to do it again at the Pegasus. Now, obviously hitting 12, you know, three straight supers ice cold was difficult. That's why there's $5 million. But the key, and I believe is what everybody should understand, is that regardless, there's a point system that it's attached to your picks. Someone will win $100,000. So basically, you have to, if you enter all three, actually, you don't even have to enter all three. Technically, if like you forget or something, you miss one, you're still going to earn points on each event. And at the end of the day, it's simple. We're going to add up the points, and whoever has the most, if no one wins $5 million, will win $100,000 cash. Unlike these other games out there that, of course, we all know about, that where there's the prizes are merchandise or they're tickets. So there's again, $100,000 is something going into somebody's pocket come January at the end of the contest.
That's great. I mean, that's a very, very cool opportunity, and it's a free roll, so why not do it? We'll change that pretty link, the inthemoneypodcast.com/grand. Once the contest is open, that will link right to where you make your picks, and we'll be blowing that out next week in all of our programming. I wanted to talk to you about other Preakness Day wagering options, because I know last year you added a bunch of very horse player friendly options. Will any of that stuff be back, and what do you got for us?
Well, let me tell you what I mean. I know my audience here, right? So as horse players, I'm going to give you the best news. Now, it may not be the best news for other people out there and sponsorship and other kind of horseman relations, but the last race on Preakness Day will be a thoroughbred race this year. Nice. There will be a chance to bail out. You know, in the last couple of years, we had a great relationship and we had an Arabian race. It's not going to happen at Preakness. I'm told it will happen at another venue down the road, TBD, TBA. But bottom line is, it's Preakness Day. I think we should end the card with a thoroughbred race to, you know, click off a bunch of wagers and, of course, try to bail out. So that's number one, I think, is nobody really has picked up on that yet. So that's new information. There'll be all of those pick fives we did last year. I think 12. There's a chance we might have a couple more late here. But bottom line, at least 12 pick fives. Remember, 12% takeout on the pick fives at Preakness, at Pimlico. So we'll have two-day pick fives. One will have mostly grass, but of course it'll land on the Preakness, and then there'll be mostly dirt, and that'll also, of course, you know, end with the Preakness as well. And of course the Black Eyed Susan, Preakness daily double. So plenty of opportunities. Listen, last year we were trending to break all records on Preakness Day. Unfortunately, of course, Seven Horse Field in the Preakness hurt, handle on that race itself, but the day was trending in the perfect direction as far as wagering. And we feel like the other fields are coming together really well. The dinner party had 41 nominees. Remember, the dinner party used to be the Dixie, had 41 noms, the most since they started calculating nominees that I could get from them. So, we're poised for a huge weekend.
Love it. Where can people get all that wagering info when the time comes? I mean, we can obviously pump it out through our free newsletter if people want to sign up for that. But is there a perfect place to get to see what all the different options are in terms of those pick bets?
I would go to Preakness.com. Everything will be up there. I mean, you can still buy a couple of tickets, by the way. I mean, it's truly limited at this point, I would say, except maybe for the infield, which, again, the infield these days, again, if you haven't been in a while, right?
It's not your father's infield.
It's not your father's infield. Listen, I spent a lot of early day infields there, but it's a party, but it's not like insane the way it was. And there's all these cool activations. We have all these big sponsors that, you know, Bullet will have an activation. We have all, you know, Guinness, all this kind of deals that like you can enjoy. And then, you know, there's DJs all day. And then of course, as soon as the race ends, as soon as that last thoroughbred race ends, we will have Jack Harlow will perform, who is obviously awesome. A huge horse racing guy these days. He was at the Derby and, you know, you saw him last year and stuff. So it'll be a lot of fun. So the party will continue well into the night, but again, the wagering options are full. And again, back to this first Grand Three, free to play. You put your name and your email, and that's it. It's that simple. You click a couple of buttons and you're live. You get a shot for $5 million, but really also $100,000 at the end of the rainbow.
I want to piggyback. We'll talk about when we have the races, we're going to do some special coverage of those pick fives because I have some points to make about them. Basically, the points are these are great bets to pool with your friends because they're hard to hit. But with that great takeout, like if you don't have the bankroll to attack it yourself, find ways to get involved because these are great opportunities. I did want to say that. And then we'll have advice for you about how to choose. With so many options, sometimes it can be hard to choose which one to play in. We got an answer for that too. We'll probably talk about that on the live show we're going to do next week. And you mentioned about that last thoroughbred race. We're going to have, as part of our sister project, Contest Jockey, which you can find over at contestjockey.com. We're going to have a free-to-play contest there, awarding. It'll be on the Preakness, up to the Preakness, and then the winner of that contest will probably make it. The top three will be in the prize pool, and you'll get a bet on that last thoroughbred race. So what better way to potentially bail out or top up than with a little free roll? You can go over to contestjockey.com to check that out. Other URLs you want to keep in mind, preakness.com. You can find all about the first Grand Three Pick'em and all these bets that are going to be coming down the line. And then again, if you don't want to remember that, inthemoneypodcast.com/grand will send you right to the same place. Peter, wonderful speaking with you today. And we're going to, you know, no good deed goes unpunished around here. We'll have you back next week.
Thanks, Pete. And by the way, let me just say, you know, I say bailout. You know, it's just because where I'm bred that we have to bail out in the last. I mean, you're right. I like top up. I like, you know, I got to change my language. You don't need to bail out in the last. You just got to keep it going. You're right. That's the way to position it.
You work with us, Pete. You get your ads, you get your content segments, you get your free consulting too.
Thank you. Appreciate it. And therapy. Thank you.
Thanks, bud. For this week's JRA segment, we wanted to do something a little bit different on the heels of the Kentucky Derby last weekend. And of course, just to promote the fact that we in the United States can bet on the JRA in our own independent pools. The races happen Saturday night into Sunday morning, and there's great information from the team over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com. Free pass performances, a great reason to stay up late and get some action. So to talk about both of these topics, the Kentucky Derby and the Victoria Mile happening Saturday night into Sunday morning, we bring in two experts from our Japanese team, starting with a woman whose work you've read over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com on Pedigree throughout this Kentucky Derby season and a regular member of the team as well, Alex Henry. Alex, how are things?
Things are great. Good morning, everyone.
And also, we bring in, coming from Japan, a man who did not make his way to this year's Kentucky Derby, but has been to the event in the past, appreciates the spectacle, and very curious to get his take on what we saw last weekend in the Derby, Toshi Onokubo. Toshi, how are things?
Everything good, Pete. Thanks for having me. And, you know, it's unfortunate. It was unfortunate I couldn't make the Derby. And then, yeah, I missed the 150th, and I definitely missed a great racing at the Churchill Downs this year. But, I mean, it's still, you know, it was still great race. Probably for me, you know, for me, definitely, yeah. It was one of the greatest Kentucky Derby in the last couple of years.
It was certainly incredibly exciting. And Toshi, we'll start the first question with you. When we did our preview of the race, you hadn't given Teal Password that much credit, and you liked Forever Young, but, you know, you thought a win might be out of reach. Were you pleasantly surprised with how well the Japanese horses ran under the Twin Spires on the first Saturday in May?
I mean, 100% I was surprised in a good way. I mean, I expected Forever Young to run well, definitely. And I, as I said, you know, fast three, you know, finishing in the fast three would be great results for Japan. And it was way, way greater than I thought. And it was, you know, he was touching the trophy differently. And also, you know, we need to, you know, mention about that. The Teo Pass was great run, you know. He performed so well, finished in fifth in the, you know, one of the best races in America. And also before the day, you know, Teo Sandri, who's the company horse for the Japanese horses, in particular for Teo Password from the same stable and same owner, running the grade two, you know, condition horse, or, you know, not you know, black type horse in Japan, running in second in the grade two. What a great result for Japan.
It was super exciting. Alex, as a well-known JRA fangirl, Japanese racing fangirl, you must have been over the moon with these results. Were you able to, I'd love to hear about your emotions watching them run and learn if you were able to connect the dots in terms of any wagering.
You know what? I was literally crying in like my husband and best friend's arms. I was like, I thought Forever Young had it. And they were like, he might have it. I was like, oh my goodness, they did it. We did it. And then the photo came up and I was like, oh snap. But hey, you can't help but to be so absolutely proud of how Forever Young ran, how Sakai-san rode that horse, and how Kimura-san rode Teal Password, and how that horse performed. Both horses just absolutely, and Teal Santini as well. Both, all three ran lights out all weekend. Happy tears at the end of the day. I thought he was winning. I think if he could get a clean run, he could run down Mystic Dan. All credit to Mystic Dan, ran a fantastic race. All credit to Sierra Leone, ran a fantastic race. Run that, you know what I like to say? The game gallop racer, right? So if you have a big race, you may save your game before a big race, right? I would love to save that game before this year's Derby and then reload again to try to get a different result. That's how I like to think about it. But excellent race. It's in the record books, and I'm just super happy and grateful.
Alex, you've brought up the elephant in the room, so we'll go there next, and I'll start with you. I thought it was a case of clear interference. I was shocked that the stewards didn't light the inquiry light. Should Forever Young have at least been promoted second, and with a clear run, does Forever Young win the Kentucky Derby?
I personally think so. I know I'm not alone in this sentiment. You've probably seen me on X or Twitter, and many people who are much more educated than me, even on racing, I believe, agree. it was just really unfortunate not to see a clean run, and that I have a photograph in, like, ingrained in my mind. It's embroidered in my mind now at this point. It's a photo by Alex Evers. He's an excellent racehorse photographer all around the world. He has a clear photo of Tyler Gaffalione, who, again, Sakai-san, the jockey of Forever Young, did come out with a very classy statement saying that his horse was not grabbed, the rein wasn't grabbed. I understand that. I respect that. But Sierra Leone, as a horse, without jockey aid at all, did come in. And I would have liked to see some kind of steward's decision based on the actions of Sierra Leone alone. TGAF did his best. Sakai-san did his best. But I would have liked to see a reversal of decision there.
I think that's very fair and well put. Toshi, how's this been received in Japan? Has there been much news coverage about it? Because, I mean, I'm telling you, if it was an American horse and there had been a claim of foul, this is 9 of 10 to have changed the result. They wouldn't have obviously elevated him to the winner. Mystic Dan didn't do anything, but it's very unusual from a USA point of view. I want to drill down a little bit into the Japanese perspective. Has this been reported on much over there?
I mean, yes, you know, this caused controversy definitely in Japan as well. And there's, you know, quite a few talks on, you know, particularly the picture, you know, we mentioned about that, you know, grabbing the rein or pushing the horse. But I think that talked about it by racing fans a lot in Japan. And no inquiry was, yeah, definitely a surprise thing. Yeah, but yeah, we need to talk about, you know, a little bit more, you know, professionally as a, you know, race analysis. So I think, yeah, the part of the interference, definitely that was, but I think we need to look into the whole home stretch, what happened actually for the two horses. That's my personal view. But for your question, yes, there's a lot of talk on that. But at the same time, it was great run and positive result for Japan. So it's not as negative as something, you know, controversy happened in other countries or particularly in the US. I don't think in Japan, something like that.
Interesting. Very interesting. I want to ask you about the culture of Japan, and I hope I'm not saying something insensitive here, but I get the impression that sportsmanship and the idea of being a class competitor, I think these ideas are maybe a little bit more valued in Japan than they are in the USA. Put another way, I think you guys might just be a little bit too polite. Like, the fact, or didn't understand the rules, I was very, very surprised. I mean, shocked that the stewards didn't put on the light, but I was also very surprised that there was no claim of foul. Is it safe to say that there might be a cultural thing that caused that to happen, or is that just a narrative that I've invented?
Yeah, that's, you know, I don't know, to be honest, because I don't know what's happened, you know, the connections, what they talked, but the not claiming a foul is, yeah, probably typical in Japan as culturally. And, you know, precedents say that not many objections accepted by steward, or this, you know, the DQ by steward by objection in Japan. So that's one thing. And you mentioned that they didn't know the rules. I mean, it's possible. I don't know. They should. I mean, it's disappointing if they didn't. But yeah, from the sounds of it, they knew how to do that, but they didn't. They decided not to do. And yeah, probably that's, you know, being polite to, you know, being a good loser. You know, it's that that's a competition or that's a racing. That's what they, one of their course said. So that's a culture, being polite or being a good loser. That's what I'm seeing from the all the comment and publishment on the, you know, internet. But yeah, it's what it is. But then, you know, I have a question to you. The person based in US, you know, jockeys or trainers, I don't think owner can, but, you know, trainers or jockey, if it's US based trainer, what would happen? And in this case, Stuart didn't turn the inquiry rights on. So tell me about that, please.
I'll take that one. If it was a US-based horse and the stewards didn't put the light up, they would have claimed foul. I think it probably would have been a lengthy inquiry just because it is the Kentucky Derby. But that's that's not, you know, we've seen it before. We saw it a few years ago with Maximum Security. I mean, they'll do it. It's not a bad thing in terms of the broadcast. Of NBC actually probably would have loved to see an inquiry. The ratings went up after the inquiry light went up. A lot of people tuned in after seeing it on social media, whatever, for Maximum Security. I'm sure it would have been the same here. So there's no conspiracy theory in those regards. Like the broadcast would have loved it. But I think a horse not 9 out of 10 would have been promoted to second only. Now my question, and we'll bring Alex back in for this one. Well, Alex already semi-answered this one, so I'll throw it back to Toshi first. Do you think if Sierra Leone if Sierra Leone lugs, if he's not keeping a straight line, but manages not to full on hamper Forever Young, do you think he gets to the wire first, Toshi?
That's a very difficult question, to be honest. Yeah, I mean, how much that interference cost? That's a question. But another thing we need to ask is, if Sierra Leone didn't, you know, going to, you know, leading to inside, probably he had won it.
That's
my point of view.
I agree.
So if all run straight, probably Sierra Leone, Forever Young, and Mystic Dawn. That's what I'd say. But that's only my point of view. But if Forever Young was the only horse run straight, probably he had won it.
I think it's a political answer, but it's a correct answer. What do you think, Alex?
I totally agree. It was so just gut-wrenching to see that head-on view. And that's where I truly saw like what actually happened. Again, all jockeys ran their race. All jockeys, to my opinion, and from the opinion of Sakai-san, Tyler Gaffleone, everyone ran a safe and a good race. I just can't help but to replay that in my mind. If I were to reload that game, that race, in my proverbial video game mind, I would have to say Forever Young would win that race. He just ran too well, within a nose of a nose from Derby Roses. It's insane to think about. So,
and I love you mentioning video games, and I've made this point almost every time that you're on, Alex, but we have a lot of new people here since the Kentucky Derby. I will point out that you are someone who taught herself basic Japanese so she could play video games. So this is an important, when you speak of video games, you're speaking of something that you know and care about tremendously.
Yeah, it's right back there, over there. Winning Post 10 2024 Deluxe Edition. I got it. So it's great.
Let's talk about the Victoria Mile for a minute, team, because this is obviously important action happening Saturday night into Sunday morning. We've got the fillies and mares, the older horses, going to be on display. There'll be full coverage of this with picks for the whole card, past performances over at inthemoneypodcast.com sometime USA Eastern time Saturday afternoon. But wanted to at least get a couple of thoughts from each of you on this race, horses to watch, maybe a short list, maybe if you've gotten that far, a horse to wager on. Alex, we'll keep it with you.
Sure. It's going to be, as Toshi said earlier, it's a pretty wide open race, but there are two clear betting favorites. We have Namur, and she's currently sitting at about 2.1 decimal odds. And I'd like to preface this race, again, being the Victoria Mile, for fillies and mares 4 years old and older. This is run over 1 mile on the turf at Tokyo Racecourse. So again, Namur being the favorite, she brings excellent, Dubai form, and she was second, a sharp second off a layoff after running the Hong Kong Mile. She's answered pretty much every Japanese test at a mile, being the mile championship winner of last year. So if she brings that form in, she carries her form over from the Middle East, she definitely can be, you know, right there. Her chief rival is Masked Diva. She is a grade 2 Hanshin Himba winner over, again, mile 1600 meters at Hanshin Racecourse as a heavy favorite last out. She runs very tactically. She sat about fourth and then pounced after the far turn to win that race. So it'll be, and that was over a filly that, or mare that was, that's going to be in this race on Saturday night called Umbrail. So these two are the clear betting choices. Definitely curious to hear who Toshi thinks is a long shot to look at. I'm looking at Fierce Pride, of course, as a daughter of Deep Impact, a six-year-old mare her most recent win is a grade 3 over 1600 meters. But I like her at a price, but curious to hear who you guys like.
Tell me what you think, Toshi.
Yeah, it's, you know, as you say, you know, I think it's RX, you know, it is, looks like, you know, two horses races, so two mares, you know, Mask Diva and Namu. And I believe Namu is the best mirror in Japan currently. But, you know, the race record and Dubai Turf or any Dubai races coming back from Dubai and first time out in Japan after that is always difficult, not great track record. So that's one barrier to for Namu to overcome. And they changed jockey as well. I mean, Yutaka Take, I mean, he's a legend, but it's, you know, also another thing to overcome for her. And, you know, Mask Diva, this is third time out for her in this season. And yeah, 4 years old, should be improved, the Joao Moreira. So if you know, she's a higher price, yeah, I think not the bad one to take. And you mentioned about Umbrella ridden by the King Yuga Kawada. I mean, she is definitely one of the you know, outsider, I'd say. And then other horses I'd like to mention, yeah, as you mentioned, Fierce Bride, Crystal Fumel, a little bit outpriced as well. And then outsider, yes, Stunning Rose, Group 1 winner. I mean, probably she need a little bit more trip, but I mean, interesting and drawn well in stall 3. And Lyrak drawn well in stall 1. Yeah, those horses, you know, second time out in this season should be improved and, you know, competing just against fillies. I think, yeah, that would be interesting. Two other horses outside of what you mentioned.
Some interesting ideas for USA-style exotics and getting involved on the win end. Again, InTheMoneyPodcast.com. I'm going to have full tips on the entire card from Toshi, from Alex, from the rest of the team. Before I let you guys get out of here, do either of you have any closing thoughts, whether it's something about the Victoria Mile or looking back to this year's Kentucky Derby, you know, where we might hope to see Forever Young next, anything along those lines before we close it out? Alex, we'll start with a closing thought from you.
Man, I think there's a meme that went around a couple of years ago called "I will never financially recover from this." I don't remember where it's from, but I probably will never emotionally recover from this year's Derby, in a good way, in a bad way, but I'm going to focus on the good. I'm just so proud that Japan really showed, even with a long shot like Tio Denis and Tio Password, that, hey, we're right there. We're two noses apart from Roses, two noses apart, you know, from Eternal Glory. It's going to happen. So I, you know, that's not really a good news for our prices on next year's Japanese contingent to come over to the Derby, but I'm just so proud and so grateful that the connections brought over amazing horses, and I'm very grateful everything was run safely and healthily. I will just really quickly give out one more big long shot sitting at 35 to one, basically, is Conch Shell. She's coming off two wins in the a grade three previously, an allowance. She'll be running the Victoria Mile, so I would like to add her to my exotic plays as well.
Love that. You know, before I get your closing thought, Toshi, I do, you know, one of the things I want to bring up about Forever Young, given the start that he had and all those concerns about kickback, well, he certainly had to take some kickback there off that beginning. Have there been any stories about what they was done in training to prepare him for this test? It just felt like that which seemed like it might be an issue coming into the race, wasn't an issue at all. Has that been reported on much over there?
Not much actually, but they used the hood on Forever Young, and also there's a report for, you know, Yahagi, they did something secret, and we don't know the secret, but he knows something. We know, that's at least we know, you know, he knows something. And yeah, also, you know, in Dubai, you know, they use the company horse Libyan Grass in front of him and the experience kickback. So everything contributes, and experience in other races as well, I believe.
Good stuff. Give us your closing thought, whether it's about the Derby or looking ahead to this racing on Saturday night.
Yeah, I must mention about Derby. So for the controversy, first, did it cost any potentially better price for him? No one can argue that, I believe. I think it's 100%. That's what I'd say. And second, as a Japanese native, I totally understand what they did. And, you know, they didn't claim a foul. I mean, I know that if they did, what's happened, as I said, the first statement, I think it should be. But yeah, I totally understand what they did. And final thought, it was a great run, great racing. And all kudos to the old connections, you know, not only for Ebiang, you know, Theo Sandrini and Theo Passwart. What a great performance by those horses at Churchill Downs on that weekend.
That's a great place to leave it. Yeah, none of this, I want to make clear, is to take away from Mystic Dan, who ran a brave and noble race himself. And given the post dynamic, the pace dynamics, I don't want to argue with anybody who says he was the best horse. But for me, like the team here, I did want to just shine a little bit more of a light on how impressive Forever Young was. And we encourage folks to check out the JRA Racing. They've been great partners for us for a number of years, and it's given me the great pleasure of working with the likes of Alex and Toshi. Team, thank you so much for your time today. That's going to do it for this edition of the show. I want to thank all of today's guests, as well as our founding partners over at 10 Strike Racing. Looking forward to getting a chance to hang out with them soon down at Pimlico, and also Therapeutic Horses of Saratoga. That's where Kim Weir's working now. To learn more about their mission, go to inthemoneypodcast.com/horses. Thanks most of all, though, to all of you, the listeners, for making these shows so much fun to do, especially those of you who are signed up for our free email newsletter. Best way to keep track of all the content we got coming down the pike on the written side. Lots of free analysis over at the website, as well as the YouTube channel, and of course, podcasts as well, and other links of interest. InTheMoneyPodcast.com/email. The show's been a production of In the Money Media. Our business manager is Drew Coatney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos.